To be an elite financial advisor, you need to exceed your clients' expectations whenever they meet with you. Unfortunately, most advisors are holding very average meetings. Years ago, I finally challenged myself to evaluate my meetings, and I realized they were very average at best. It was not until I unlocked the power of the whiteboard when the energy changed in the room, when I had clients saying, "This was a great meeting. This was more than I expected." I want to challenge you to start using a whiteboard today. Stand up in the room, teach, coach, educate, and exceed your clients' expectations. Check out gobeelite.com to see 10 videos that I've made of me whiteboarding. 5 of those videos are me teaching advisors how to whiteboard, and 5 of those videos are videos I've sent directly to my clients. This is a very easy way to improve your communication skills, but also to attract your clients, to attract new prospects, and to exceed their expectations. Go check it out. Welcome to this episode of Becoming an Elite Financial Advisor. I'm an active financial advisor just like you. The purpose of this podcast is to share ideas and knowledge from advisors from around the country and our community to help other advisors recognize and reach their full potential faster. On today's episode, Andy and I are going to unpack some questions from our community. One question around fees: what's the right way to charge a financial planning fee that's fair, but also profitable and efficient for you? We're also going to talk about marketing material, collateral, what should be internal facing and how should it differ from what you put in front of a client to set expectations. And we're also going to talk about how can you target specific groups such as doctors with specific strategies. We'll talk about a lot of great ideas on today's podcast. And for the resources, go to gobeelite.com to download some resources, join our community. Let's dive in. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Sten Morgan here with Andy, and today we are going to unpack a few different questions we've received from advisors in our community, some coaching calls. So this is going to be more of a quick hit episode. So we'll dive right in.
Absolutely, Sten. We get questions all the time from people in our community, outside. We try to answer as many of those as we can. I've pulled out some highlights. I think these are ones that people will find interesting and applicable to where they're at. The first one is about fee structures. So someone had asked in our community, are most advisors just doing a one-time planning fee or doing an initial planning fee plus ongoing subscription fees and a service model to support the subscription? So that's from Gregory. So charging a minimum fee, do you expect a renewal? It's the most common question I get about planning from people who actually haven't even gotten paid for planning is, what about renewal?
Yeah.
So a lot of different options there. How can you bring some clarity to that?
So I think this came to me in versions. Like version one, which we see a lot of advisors go through, is I'm just going to throw out a number and hope somebody says yes to it. This number could be driven by your compliance department where they say, hey, here's your minimum fee or here's your maximum fee. I do want, as soon as possible, for the fee conversation to become more of like a value conversation with the client. The book we launched, Value First Prospecting, is if it's fee focused, I think the client will pick up on that, versus if it's a value driven conversation, the fee determines less of the relationship. So I would encourage you, as an advisor listening, internally, you need to have a good fee structure you understand. But when you present it to a client, it should be, this is the way we work. That you are able to say it with confidence and communicate it maybe even visually, what your engagement's going to look like. So I do see more advisors charging one-time planning fees and some gravitating towards the subscription model because that just sounds good. Like it just feels like recurring revenue is always nice. At Legacy, we went to just a one-time fee, but everything was a 12-month engagement.
Yeah.
Until I realized I'm doing most of the work in the first 3 to 4 months. And I position the engagement to my client as a 12-month engagement.
Yeah.
And what happens is you do a lot of work up front, and then it's kind of, well, what do we do now? And then the client, especially if you're doing a subscription-based engagement and you haven't set a really clear expectation of the engagement, they will start thinking, you know, what am I paying for? Yeah. Hey, I haven't heard from you in a while. So one, get better at setting expectations up front with the client so you can avoid those conversations. But as we've iterated over time, I've realized an initial 12-month engagement leaves a lot of time for things to change.
Yeah.
So with Legacy, we do initial 3 months engagements with clients. So I'm going to spend 3 months rolling up my sleeves, getting to know you, a very clear start, a very clear stop. I'm going to add a lot of value to you. And then I'll probably check in 3 or 6 months later just to make sure you're doing well. Some of those engagements do pivot to ongoing 12-month engagements where we're holding quarterly strategy meetings if the client has that need. So for us internally as a business, simpler is usually better. As opposed to having 10 different fee structures and a matrix you're changing all the time, we decided to say we have more like packages. Like if you have a basic plan, here's the cost because we know how we can deliver it. If it's a business and you own some real estate, that's a more complex plan. Here's the fee for that because we know what it's going to take to deliver it. What finally freed me up to simplify my offering and communicate it clear was having a really good process. So we use PlanScore internally. And I know that if my team has a really clear process to build a plan, I have less fee risk because I'm avoiding those engagements where somebody pays me, you know, $2,500, $5,000, and it grows, you know, 10 other legs. And I'm, you know, 6 months in. And because I didn't set good expectations, every day that passes, this engagement becomes less profitable or I start losing money. So I think the takeaway is have a simple, profitable, efficient financial plan deliverable and a fee model that you can stick to. And then maybe review it once a year or once every 2 years. Try to avoid an ever-changing fee structure that you can't even explain very well.
Yeah. And also another way of saying that is not just one you can't explain well, but one you can, people will feel great about. Like I feel great in certain memberships I have because I feel like, wow, I pay this much and I get 20x that value.
Yeah.
That's the kind of relationship you want to have. But I know that when I pay for a year's subscription to Costco, I can go in 365 days a year and find, or 360 and find value. When someone pays you a subscription, they're going to expect value every month. And unless you somehow can communicate that, like, hey, you're going to pay over 12 months, but we're going to do majority of the work in the first, it just gets messy. So I really like how you guys have sort of tightened it. For those who have to stand, for those who have to do 12 months, is the conversation just, hey, we're going to be busier here and then we'll check in. Like how, if you have to do 12 months because your company says we only do 12-month engagements, what do you say to those people?
There's a difference between your service model and the engagement structure from a compliance standpoint. So if your firm is telling you we do 12-month engagements, well, you get to set the expectation with the client how often they're going to hear from you.
Right.
And so you may still tell them, hey, for the first 3 months, this is going to be a lot, like pretty labor intensive. There's some really big firms we work with that have 12-month engagements, but a plan has to be delivered within a month or two.
So
whatever your constraints are, guardrails, build a really efficient client service model. Do not enter an engagement with a client, not clearly tell them when you're meeting, how often, and because you're just setting yourself up for the client being frustrated and even your team internally being frustrated because there's not a clear service model for them to follow.
Yeah.
But I think through the subscription model, I see the appeal of it. And if you did build a service model where maybe more than half of the touch points were automated, like, hey, maybe because you are a client of ours and you're on a subscription basis, we're going to meet twice a year, but every month I'm going to send you education. Every 2 weeks, I'm going to send you a video of something you should know about. Like if you can set the right expectation of here's why you're going to keep paying because you're getting access to something, or when it comes to subscriptions, if people leave, they lose something. So I think there has to be a whole different approach to like, how do I want to set up and maintain a subscription model? If it was $300 a month, well, from a business standpoint, wouldn't you rather charge a one-time $3,600 fee, get the funds pretty much up front, and deliver 3 months of value and then be done versus this ongoing forever service model? To me, that just feels a little more risky.
Maybe we can end with this part for this question, which is the other thing you open yourself up to when you are doing subscriptions is, oh, I lost my card. Oh, my card. Like you're going to run into issues with more billing because you're going to have 12 billings versus maybe one or two a year. So just again, simplicity, and, you know, clarity. And so those are different options you have, but we tend to bend towards simplicity when at all possible. All right.
Yeah. And that's not, I'm naturally try stuff out, iterate it. And what happens when you iterate things and you just tack it on, you end up having a lot of different things tacked on that at times try to strip away everything that's not needed. The goal, you know, get to point A, from point A to point B with the least amount of risk and friction as possible. And I'm guilty of this at times where it's like, I probably just overcomplicated that. And so it's a gift to yourself, your team, and your clients. If you can say, here's how we work, here's a clear expectation, and it's as much value in the shortest time frame as possible.
I like that.
Versus always thinking longer is better. It's like, well, no, they'd probably take the value in 3 months if you could give it to them and not have to do a 12-month thing.
Absolutely. Hey, friend, this is Andy. Pardon the interruption, but first I'm going to say, hey, thank you so much for being a faithful listener to our show. And second, I'm going to tell you about something that we have never done before that we're doing now, which is we are taking deposits for our event. So our next event in person is not until October of 2025. So we've decided to take deposits now for that event. It will sell out. We sold out our April event, and we have a huge gap between now and our next event. So if you go to howtocharge.live.com, that's howtocharge.live.com right now, you can put a deposit down, hold your seat, and then pay the rest later in the year. So we will hopefully see you at our next event. You won't want to miss it. And now back to our show. All right. Next one we're going to talk about is one of our members has built, and this is their question was, this is my process card I give to people in my first strategy session with them. Has anyone developed anything like this for planning fee conversations? That's from David. I will say to begin with, we have this inside of PlanScore in a sense that we have a timeline. PlanScore is our software that helps you sell planning. So when the proposal section, I'm trying to remember the proposal, if that's in the plan itself, but it'll have the timeline of this can, and you can customize it. This is going to take 4 weeks. This is going to take 2 weeks. So, so there is that. And then we also have the six categories of planning that people touch on, but he has built this one and if you're watching on YouTube, I'll just flash it up here on YouTube. So you can see just a quick glance of that. And he's got basically looks like five sort of touch points, and then each one has anywhere from 6 to 10, different sort of sub points of the engagement. What's the value of this? How would you know? Is it a good idea to have something like this? And would you bring it out in the first strategy session?
So for me, within PlanScore, I built the proposal tool to have the timeline page on it because it keeps me accountable to stopping and setting that expectation versus getting excited and just jumping in and realizing I can see in my mind what's coming next, but the client or prospect has zero context. They've never done this before. So I need to walk them step by step. That'll be a gift to them. I do think of this as an internal and an external process, meaning as I walked through this one when we got it, there's a version of this probably that I would use that I show a client that's a little simpler. The language is maybe a little more like exciting and colorful, strategic, R&D, like to where they're like, oh, this is different than anything I've had before. But then I probably have an internal workflow process that actually is a little more detailed, kind of like what this version shows.
So I think this is what they show the client. And I agree with you. I think that there's good things in here. But if we like walked through this, that's a long walk. Because there's a lot to go over. And again, this is where people can be overwhelmed by too much information. So I think you want less menu and more sort of like visual guide, right?
Yeah, I think at times we have to take our advisor hat off and put our marketing hat on and say, what am I putting in here that's helping them move where I want them to go?
Yeah.
Whereas the detailed breakdown, you know, workflow, internal map is for your team to say, never miss a step. For my pair planner, it's like, okay, when we get to, for PlanScore terminology, the tax strategy section or the retirement planning or the investment planning, here are the 10 steps you need to take in order to build this section out. Mm-hmm. I think the more detailed, the better. So things aren't missed. From a client-facing collateral standpoint, I will challenge everybody listening that never show a client something unless it's so meaningful.
Yeah.
I think I've been guilty in the past of sending like a trifold or a pamphlet that shows, hey, you know, when you go to advisor's website and you click on services and their services say everything, you know, it's a pretty standard template for us as advisors. And I had that website for a long time where I was like, I do college planning, I do retirement planning, I do investment estate, that it's almost so much that it's nothing that I would prefer if I was a prospect to go to your website and see like a dynamic, colorful, simple page that shows, here's why our process is different. Because we do this and we do R&D and we're strategic, we're proactive. And here's the six categories of planning we dive into. But you're not giving me a bunch of extra stuff that I don't understand.
Right. Yeah. Because the other part of that is from a client perspective, it's like, I don't even know what those things are. So they're not helping you. They're not bringing clarity. And again, for those who are listening to the show, you probably want to add people to your process and then figure out how you can serve them versus them going to your website or even to this sheet and saying, oh, I want these six things. They don't know what they need. Right? I don't go to my doctor's office and say, all right, here's what I need, doc. Yeah. I just go, dude, you tell me. Tell me what I need because I don't know. And I like the part where you said the internal and the external, because I think as a client, and I just kind of folded this one, if I just had sort of the images and you could walk me through that, I feel better about it. But I like the direction of this, but I would say this is probably version one, and it probably needs two or three more versions before it's really tight.
Yeah, I think to the website point, your website should only really exist to verify you and to add value. And so if you have pages upon pages on your website of just text, you know, to where it's like, I'm really asking you to spend a bunch of time that you probably don't have reading about things you don't fully understand. Like, I don't think that is a gift to the viewer of the website, as opposed to, can I accomplish everything I need to in two pages, three pages? And when they get there, I give them something of value for free that builds some rapport. I think the financial advisor website space could change dramatically if we took some advice from other websites that are more like lead gen focused. Yeah. Where, hey, when you visit my site, I want to give you something for free. And because I gave you that, I'm going to get your email. And because you gave me your email, I'm going to keep giving you stuff of value.
Right.
And then while I'm giving you stuff of value, I'm going to give you options of engaging with us. That is something, and I think the financial advisory space we're very far behind on. But I always try to put that hat on whenever I build something now. This isn't how my mind used to work. Is this accomplishing the goal I want, or is this adding any confusion? Because even a shred of confusion is pushing them away from action as opposed to towards it.
Right. Yeah, you want to be the person that they go, now it makes sense because you simplify things for me. Mm-hmm. And to simplify is, frankly, to not use a lot of language a lot of advisors use. And I even saw in that handout, there's some things that it's just more advisor language. So David, appreciate you submitting that. I'll log into our portal and give you some more feedback on some specific design changes. But I think it's there. I think that usually advisors do. It's just the same thing with whiteboarding for those who whiteboard for the first time. It's rarely, I've never seen an advisor draw too little. They always draw too much.
Yeah.
Or initially, right?
Yep.
All right, last one, and this is a larger lesson. This question was about a specific client that one of our advisors has experienced. I'm going to read the question, but then I'm going to sort of ask a different question of you, Sten. So one of our advisors said they had gotten an initial strategy meeting with a new prospect coming up. He's a new doctor in town, and that they've already discussed fee-based planning, and they're open to it, which is great. And the question was, for those who work with young doctors regularly, what strategies have you found most compelling to whiteboard? He said that we usually work with business owners, retirees, so it's not as much experience with doctors. So he has some ideas of what he wants to present. Stan, what gives you the confidence to work with different, whether it's a contractor or a doctor or a real estate investor? Like, how can advisors be prepared? So do they have to think that strategically, that niche, or should they just go get 100 different ideas and be ready for anything? Like, how would you answer this person?
I've felt overwhelmed in the past when I try to just contain all of my financial strategy knowledge in a big bucket on its own, hoping I can pull from it when needed.
Okay.
And so part of that, the plan score framework we use and we teach in our community is you break it down into cash flow. And you just look at within cash flow, and I get to that part of my fact finder, what strategies or concepts come up a lot? And I can reference something in my fact finder to remind me to teach about. Maybe it's the three buckets. Maybe it's, the investment decision filter that you over time are building your repertoire of strategies to teach on. I find, when I get to tax strategies, that one could be a little meatier. Like that, that's a category where people hear things like, I've never heard of that before. I had a meeting today with a prospect and looked at their statement, and they hadn't ever heard of tax loss harvesting. So I'm sitting there and I'm noticing, well, they've lost about $30,000 over the last month. Just the market's been volatile. Hey, has the person ever told you? And then they work with like a bigger kind of outsourced firm to where they're like, we hear from them like once a year. And so it was pretty low hanging fruit for me to say, hey, have you ever heard of this? Have you heard of active rebalancing before? Hey, what do you think about this? And they just kept giving me opportunities to get to the whiteboard to teach them stuff.
Nice.
Investment planning, you may get to where you're saying, hey, do you know how, the mountain approach we talk about where people are like, hey, there's actually more risk coming off Everest than going up. And, you know, right. So when you retire, sequence of returns risk. And so I find that if you are working with a market like doctors, if that doctor owns their practice, they're a business owner. Mm-hmm. So they're going to fall in the business owner category. And whether they are a dentist, a doctor, own a manufacturing plant, a lot of those same planning ideas are going to make
Love
sense.
That. Yeah.
You probably need to wrap it in some different language.
Mm-hmm.
Where you may say, you know, where I work with a lot of medical professionals, here's something I see a lot. It could be for doctors, I found disability insurance, educating them on like ONOC versus REGOC. And I've seen a lot of policies from big companies that are, you know, ONOC for 2 years and then they switch to REGOC. If you're in a room with a doctor and you're the first person to ever tell them, hey, did you know this small print? That's a building rapport moment.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we may not work together, but I want you to know this, that this is probably a gap in your plan. If you're talking to doctors, when you get to estate planning, that's another risk conversation. Mm-hmm. Are your assets protected? Do you have an umbrella policy? And so my hope is for everybody listening is that you have a system in place to where it doesn't feel like every time a prospect says yes, you're starting from scratch.
Right.
That does feel heavy. Is that the reason I built PlanScore is mainly for legacy to use it. We've been using it for a couple of years now, that when a client says yes to us, you just start the system.
Right.
The framework goes. And every client's different. So as advisors, we're always going to have to add our own nuance in there. But what if we could have, you know, 80% of every plan pretty much built and ready to go?
Yeah.
Before we have to add in the nuance, I think that would give me a lot of confidence then to work with any client from any market or demographic.
Yeah, I think about when someone, you know, literally orders a car online. It's crazy. You can like buy cars online, right? Like you can customize it. And the car manufacturer at no point is like, oh, freaking out. Like,
yeah.
But they have a system in place. They have the main things and you can customize it from there. And so it is about having a framework. It's about not having every option in the world, but it's having enough options to customize it for them. And I like what you said, that you're gonna, and the other thing with PlanScore is once you start building out templates, it's like, oh, there's a doctor who owns a practice, a doctor who doesn't. You essentially can have almost the same plan in many ways. And so you can start to systematize it even more and more and more. So I love the idea of gathering as many ideas as you can, but also changing the language depending on, you know, if they're a doctor or a contractor. But I also love the filter of, and I hope you guys caught that, is they're a business owner. They're a business owner just like, you know, a person who, you know, bought a franchise is a business owner.
Yeah.
A business owner is a business owner is a business owner. So knowing those and being really dialed in on those ideas is really going to help you.
I find working with, you know, business owners, it's risk and tax. I think those kind of hit home. With W-2, mass affluent, a lot of times it's cash flow to retirement, meaning help me manage and create a plan of putting my money in the right place so that I can retire sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's the language that I more focus on. So as you guys hear all these questions, these are just examples of questions that we get in our community all the time. My hope is you have a community of some kind. If not, we'll put some of these resources, join our community in Circle, and we'll put all this stuff up there. But take action on something. I just got back from a great conference. I'll probably do an episode soon unpacking it. But find your immediate constraint. Like, don't get overwhelmed with facts and information and knowledge and not take action. That if you heard something today that you're like, that stuck out or that triggered me in some way, find 15, 20 minutes today or tomorrow, sit down on a whiteboard and say, okay, what do I do with this information? So we don't just sit there getting smarter, but not taking action.
Awesome. Thank you, Stan.
Thanks, bud.